if the Democrats gain control of the Senate, you'll see a larger package of coronavirus relief. And if the Republicans maintain control, you'll see a smaller package. But I think you'll see a package.
Hey, gang, what's happening? Glad to have you here. Glad to be here. My name is Bill Sheridan. This is Future Proof. Let's get right into it, shall we? Little housekeeping first. This week's show is sponsored, as always, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses, dozens of instructors, and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you. That's you, by visiting blionline.org. So, how about that election, huh? As much as I am loath to do it, we are going to talk a little politics today, as it relates, however, to tax issues. So there's the silver lining. So a couple of months ago, I spoke to Tony Nitti, who compared President Trump and former President Joe Biden when it comes to their tax policies, right? At the time, everything was pretty much up in the air and unknown. That was pre-election. Things are a little clearer now. Not a lot, but a little. Joe Biden is our president-elect. And yeah, I know the lawyers and the judges and the courts are still doing their thing. But for the time being, we're going on the assumption that Joe Biden will be our next president. Congress is a different story. The House is going to remain in Democrats' hands, but the Senate is still kind of unknown at this point. Appears it will remain under Republican control, but we won't know for sure until January. And of course, Biden's ability to get any tax legislation passed is going to depend on those remaining Senate races. So clear as mud, right? But we're going to try to clear the water a little bit today. And here to help me do that is my guest this week. He is Ed Carl. Ed is Vice President of Taxation for the American Institute of CPAs. He's also a member of the Maryland Association of CPAs. That's my employer, full disclosure. He is, he's got his finger on the tax pulse of our nation, I'd say more than almost anyone. And he's going to break all this down here for us in just a couple of minutes. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It is a breakdown of some of the potential tax policy changes and decisions that might have to be made now that the election's over. Comes to us from the Tax Foundation, which describes itself as, quote, the nation's leading independent tax policy nonprofit. Interestingly, right near the top of this list are changes that are scheduled to kick in over the next decade, courtesy of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Remember that one? A couple of those changes are actually scheduled to kick in at the end of 2021. That's when businesses will be required to deduct research and experimentation costs over 5 years rather than immediately. It's also when the deduction for tax net interest expense will be limited to 30% of earnings before interest and taxes rather than 30% of EBITDA. At the end of 2022, we're supposed to see the phasing out of full expensing for short life business investments. And then a slew of changes are scheduled to kick in at the end of 2025. That's when the reduction of individual income tax rates will expire. It's when the reduction of the alternative minimum tax will expire. It's when the reduction in the estate tax will expire. So Congress and the president may have to revisit some of those things sooner rather than later. There's, of course, the next round of COVID-19 economic relief to consider. They're going to have to decide whether to extend CARES Act provisions that are scheduled to expire at the end of the year. Tax extenders, a bunch of those will have to be considered. So there's a lot on the table tax-wise for the next president and the next Congress to think about. So that doesn't even begin to touch on things like, you know, will the filing deadlines be extended again? And just how prepared is the IRS for the coming tax season? That's what members of the House Ways and Means Committee wanted to know recently. In an article for The Hill, Naomi Jagoda reported that Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal and Oversight Subcommittee Chairman Bill Pascrell recently sent a letter to IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig to ask about IRS preparations for the upcoming busy season. And Rettig wrote back saying, quote, when one filing season ends, we are already well into preparations for the next in terms of identifying and planning for needed hiring and for updates for forms and instructions, processing and programming for the upcoming filing season. We believe it will be more important than ever for taxpayers to take advantage of e-filing and our online and virtual services to help them with their taxes, end quote. So, again, doesn't really tell us much, right? Clear as mud. And that might just be the way that things play out for a while, right? At least that's what Ed Carl says. He sat down with me recently, not long after Joe Biden was projected to be the winner of the presidential election, in fact. And we talked about the impact of the election and the pandemic and a number of other issues on not just the prospect of new tax policy, but on the upcoming tax season as well. And if you had to boil it all down to one word, he said that word might be patience. So maybe not what you wanted to hear, but you know, that's where we are right now. So let's talk a little tax, shall we? Here is my conversation with AICPA Vice President of Taxation, Ed Carl. Well, Ed, thanks so much for being here. I guess my first question is just some general post-election thoughts and non-political, of course, but you know, what's going through your mind as we're thinking about what might be to come in the coming weeks and months and years?
Yeah, thanks for thinking of me. So there are several issues. One is something that just started today as we're recording this on Monday the 9th. The lame duck session of Congress just began, and so we have the Senate back in session for a couple of weeks, and then the House comes back next week. And the real question is, what can possibly happen in these next several weeks? So I think that's the first thing. And then the next thing is, what happens in the 117th Congress after this lame duck session of the 116th? What can possibly happen? Those are the main things on people's minds beyond the politics.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I mean, there is a lot of uncertainty with the state of Congress at this point, particularly in the Senate. Although I guess it looks like it'll continue to lean Republican. We're not sure. There's a couple of runoffs coming up in January. What kind of impact, one way or the other, could that have on, you know, the work that the tax professionals are going to be doing for their clients coming up?
Well, so the runoffs in Georgia. So where we're at in the Senate is that the Republicans have 50 seats and the Democrats have 48 seats. Mm-hmm. And Georgia requires that the candidates receive at least 50% of the vote. And so there were two seats. There was an in-cycle election for Senator David Perdue, the Republican, running against John Ossoff. And then Senator Kelly Loeffler was a special election to fill the seat that was vacated in December of 2019 by the retirement of Senator Johnny Isaacson for the remainder of his term. And so both of those elections, the candidates failed to get 50% of the votes. There were multiple other candidates running. And so the top two finishers in each election have a runoff January 5th. That runoff will decide control of the Senate. So the Republicans just have to win one of the two seats. Right. They'll control the Senate. But the issue is, if the Democrats win both seats, then that means that the president pro tem of the Senate, who will be a Democrat, a vice president-elect Harris, would be the deciding vote if the Democrats win both of those seats. So, right, so it would be a 50-50 tie, and she would break the tie. And the Democrats would control the Senate. If that is the case, it's a trifecta. Of President-elect Biden, in all likelihood, even though it hasn't been called yet, it is looking like the Democrats will maintain control of the House, although by a slimmer margin. And then with the scenario that I just discussed, the Democrats would also control the Senate. In that case, there is almost assuredly going to be tax legislation sometime in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And should one of those two races go to a Republican, the Senate remains in Republican hands, and less of a chance of seeing any like fruitful legislation come through at that point?
So, yes, less of a chance. I've been saying for a while now, and I continue to believe this very strongly, with the level of debt and deficit that our country is facing right now, it just can't be sustained. Mm-hmm. And so I've been saying, notwithstanding the economic impact of the pandemic, we have to consider either cutting some programs, cutting spending, or raising taxes in 2021. I was saying this before we got to the election, before we knew that there is a Vice President Biden who is now president-elect, where there is more of a likelihood of a tax increase. We just can't sustain where we are. And so even with the slim majority controlled by the Republicans, I think there will be some kind of more of a likelihood that there will be Republicans who want to vote to reduce the deficit and reduce the level of debt we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's typically a posture for a Republican Congress.
Right, right.
So what has happened to us in the last 4 years is not a typical Republican scenario.
It's very strange how things have kind of like gone a little, like everything else in the world, gone a little topsy-turvy when it comes to
absolutely
stuff like that. So, all right, so back to our president-elect. We're looking at a Joe Biden administration at this point. What might that mean? Let's talk first of all from an individual tax standpoint. What might that mean, or what might he be proposing in that area?
So, you know, interestingly, maybe you can understand this. If you go to the campaign website, not too many campaigns want to make the idea of raising taxes stick out.
Right.
And so there are various spots within the campaign. There were discussions early on as a candidate before he was the Democratic designee. And so you sort of have to pull from different sources as to seeing what Vice President Biden was recommending in terms of some kind of a tax increase. But I would say that the most prominent would be, from a corporate perspective, raising the 21% tax rate to 28%, not back up to 35 where it was before tax reform in 2017, but raising it up to 28%, and also some kind of corporate minimum taxes.
Okay.
Which were eliminated previously. And then on the individual side, he's talked about raising the highest marginal individual rate to 39.6% for those earning over $400,000. Now, when I talk about this topic with CPAs, it's hard to understand exactly what earning over $400,000 means. We're used to thinking in the context of taxable income or AGI. We don't know. It's just earning over $400,000 right now.
Okay.
The other prominent item for raising taxes on the individual side is that the capital gains tax rate would increase for those earning over $1 million. And again, I don't know what that means. $1 million of capital gains, $1 million of AGI, you know, taxable income. I don't know what it means exactly.
Yeah. And again, on both of those fronts, corporate and individual, less of a chance of that happening if the Senate remains in Republican hands, correct?
Correct.
No.
Less of a chance. I wouldn't discount it completely, but I would say it's going to be a lot harder for Congress to do anything. I think that the one item, and you could see this happening already, where the President-elect Biden is focusing very heavily on the pandemic and creating a task force to deal with that. And so I would say along those same lines, there is a fairly strong likelihood that Congress will enact some kind of additional pandemic-related economic relief, more likely in January than the lame duck of Congress, that session that's going to go on for the next couple of weeks, more likely in January. But I would say my best guess today is that they will pass something.
Mm-hmm.
They will pass something regardless of what happens with the Senate.
And then we go right back into kind of action mode. It seems like the profession and everybody else has been waiting patiently since the middle of the summer for that next round of relief to come by, right? And that waiting will end at that point.
Exactly. And I think the runoff in Georgia will impact what that legislation looks like ultimately, but I don't think it will stop it. I think there will be something. It will be more of a compromise. I think you look back last May when the House passed their legislation and the HEROES Act. And I think what you'll see is that act was something in the neighborhood of, I think, $3 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And the parameters of the Senate legislation was more like $1 trillion, right? So if the Democrats gain control of the Senate, you'll see a larger package of coronavirus relief. And if the Republicans maintain control, you'll see a smaller package. But I think you'll see a package.
I'm just kind of curious, like a month or two ago, Ed, how likely would it have been that you would have thought that all eyes would be on Georgia at this point?
For the Senate, right. So it's been an interesting election where the polling was consistently saying that there was a strong chance that the Senate would turn blue.
Yeah.
And to think that it was so close where it would turn on Georgia was, I don't think anyone thought that. I don't think anyone thought that there was a possibility, because there are two Senate races and for the presidency that are still not been called,
right?
North Carolina and Georgia. Right. So,
yeah.
So who thought that those would be the two?
Interesting,
non-called?
Interesting times for sure. You mentioned the pandemic a couple of, couple of minutes ago, and you know, we've got tax season coming up. We just elected a new president, and we're still in the middle of this pandemic. What challenges are tax professionals facing at this point with tax season coming at them?
Well, I'll tell you what the most common questions I'm getting, the two most common, one without a doubt is the deductibility of the PPP loan forgiveness related expenses. So people want to know, will those expenses be deductible, particularly with this overlapping tax year issue. So that with the expanded covered period increased from 8 weeks, that the pretty much the norm is that businesses are getting towards the end of this year, and not even if they're applying for loan forgiveness in 2020, and I would say at this point, most of them are not, you won't find out from the SBA that the loan was actually forgiven until 2021. So you have that overlapping year, expenses in 2020, loan forgiveness in 2021. And we know with the notice that the IRS put out, 2020-32, that threw the monkey wrench into the deductibility of these expenses. They explained in that notice that expenses are non-deductible. AICPA has been advocating for and supporting the legislation that would fix that problem. Mm-hmm. There has been legislation in Congress that would allow the deductibility. I would say at this point, if there is legislation to allow additional PPP loans, additional relief, the likelihood that there will be this legislation to allow the deductibility is fairly strong.
Okay.
All right. So that would overturn this notice. The issue about the deductibility, people keep asking about, can I deduct these expenses or not? The notice, it seems to have covered that, but it's really not clear. There's really a lot of confusion in this area. And Treasury indicated about a week and a half ago that they would issue guidance to cover this overlapping year issue. Notwithstanding their guidance, there are different positions that CPA firms are taking, different positions. So there are some CPAs who are saying there is a Supreme Court case, which is very strong authority for a position. It's called the Bliss Dairy case. And the fact pattern of Bliss Dairy overlaps quite a bit with this situation that we're dealing with now, and would seem to give pretty strong authority to allow deduction of the expenses if you pay them in 2020. And if 2021 comes along and the loan is forgiven, you would have, under the tax benefit rule, income in 2021.
Okay.
Bliss Dairy would also say that if you have loan forgiveness in the same year as the expenses, you can't deduct them.
Okay.
It's an interesting scenario. So I would encourage your members to go look at the Bliss Dairy case. Having said that, there are some CPA firms who are not holding by Bliss Dairy. So it's just, I think the best case scenario would be for Congress to enact a fix and allow the deductibility. All right, that was a long-winded answer to the first, the most commonly asked question. Mm-hmm. And the second one that I've heard quite a bit about is, what's going to happen with due dates in 2021?
That was going to be my next question as well. Yeah.
Will July 15th be the due date for returns again? And my answer at this point is probably not. And AICPA is likely not to advocate, at least not today, not to advocate for a change. We will clearly monitor what's going on with the IRS, with taxpayers, clearly with CPAs, to monitor the health of the country and of everyone. And if there is a problem again, like we saw this past March and April, we would push for a change. If the system won't work with an April 15th deadline, we'll consider some kind of a change. But we're going to have to wait and see at this point.
Gotcha. And again, speaking of the IRS,
what kind of challenges are they facing or continuing to face, and how could those challenges impact tax pros as well? I know they, just like everyone else, the IRS was impacted by the pandemic. I mean, what other challenges are you seeing there?
Well, we're dealing right now with a situation where CPAs could not finish returns that were due September 15th and October 15th. And they kept working past those deadlines, but they filed some returns late. And IRS is already starting to send some penalty notices. Now, we've heard from people who said they had S corporation returns, 1120Ss, that were filed just after September 15th. They got notices. People who filed 1065s, the partnership returns, did not. So we're waiting to see what's going on with those. So we're trying to work right now with the IRS to provide an expedited and simplified process to waive penalties for those 1120Ss. It could be that they'll send notices out for the 1065s. And I know that there are people who filed some 1040s late as well. We don't want to see them get penalized, but if they do, we're trying to work out an expedited process to waive them. The parameters of what that would look like would be some kind of a dedicated phone number at IRS, or at least maybe even a phone prompt that you would have to get to people who know what's going on. They would provide relief over the phone.
Okay.
Much like first time abate, but we don't want people to have to use up first time abate. Some people, particularly those in disaster areas, might have already used up their first time abate, which you can get once every 3 years. So we want them to be able to easily abate these COVID-related penalties. People have been sick, and unfortunately, clients have died. I've heard from CPA firms where relatives have passed away or staff have passed away. It's heartbreaking. And so we're trying to work out an expedited process, an oral process. It would not, and I don't normally say this, but it would work without having to get power of attorney, so that it could just be done quickly without having to use up first time abate. So we're working on that right now, but more news to come on that front.
Sounds like there's more news to come on most of these fronts. So we're pretty much in a wait and see mode at this point on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's just a lot of the world is upended everywhere you go, and including in tax administration and the things that I work with quite a bit, unfortunately. So it's frustrating for us. We know how frustrating it is for all of our members, and we're trying to get it settled down, but there's just uncertainty everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ed, you've been doing this for a while now. In terms of complexity, how does this era kind of rank compared to any other that you've been through? Have you ever seen a tax situation like this that's has been this complex?
Not for this extended a period. Mm-hmm. I've seen, so I mentioned the disaster areas. We know a lot of our members who live in disaster areas. So in Maryland, we get a hurricane, we get some flooding, we're impacted. I don't mean it's bad for people who are impacted, but you look at the Gulf Coast, the people in Louisiana, I've spoken to them, I don't know how many times this year, how many hurricanes are headed their way. And on the West Coast, the fires, those people are impacted by a lot of uncertainty. And I would say the most glaring thing that I faced was September 11th, mm-hmm. where there was a lot of uncertainty, but it was for a short amount of time, and it impacted the whole country pretty much. Yeah. And The IRS held meetings to try to figure out what to do. It, obviously, it was just before a major estimated tax period. So it really was quite a challenging period, but it was not for this extended a period. And we're looking at months more. As I mentioned, one of the most common questions is what's going to be the due date for this upcoming filing season, and we're talking about 6 months away, 5 months away. So it's I've never seen this. No, never seen this.
And I know I like everyone else, we're full of questions. I mean, what's your best piece of advice for tax pros right now as we're gearing up for this coming tax season? If you could boil it down to one piece of advice, as if that's possible, but what would you tell tax pros as we're going into tax season this year?
Yeah, I think you're just going to have a lot of patience. As we all know, the IRS was impacted also. They had people who were sick. They were required under their union contract to implement social distancing rules, which means that their levels of service, which were already not so great,
right,
were impacted. We know today there's probably still about 5 million pieces of correspondence backlog. Mm-hmm. Should they get hit again in a bad way, and we're starting to see the pandemic ramp up again as we head into the colder months, then its service levels are going to ramp back down. Their ability to process mail will ramp back down. We're having conversations with them about trying to look at increasing the ability of back years for e-filing and 709s and 706 e-filing and making e-signatures more permanent. So there's a lot that has to change. Not all of it will. There's no doubt there were going to be a lot of frustrations and a lot of uncertainty. And the only thing I can suggest is a lot of patience, a lot of patience.
There you go. That's the word of the day, apparently. Ed, Carl, thank you. Thank you for your time, for your insights. Would love to catch up with you again when some of this uncertainty has squared itself out and find out where we are then. But in the meantime,
happy to catch up, and I hope we'll know more. I think, as we just discussed, we don't know what's going to be going on in the next several months. So let's catch up again. I appreciate you thinking of me and want to do it again.
Thanks, Ed.
All right, good stuff there for all you tax pros out there. That was Ed Carl, Vice President of Taxation for the American Institute of CPAs. You can learn more and get just a ton of resources by visiting either macpa.org/tax or AICPA.org/tax. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all the dashes I got, gang. That's it for this week. Have a great week, and we will talk to you again soon.